This is another edition of Cops Alive Audio Bulletin. Our guest today is Chuck Rylant from the Santa Maria Police Department in California in the United States. And I came across Chuck through Cops Alive and was fascinated by what he's created in his life. He's still a working police officer, and yet he's put himself through an awful lot of financial management training, and now he's making those services available to other cops. And I think he has a lot to tell us. So I'd like to welcome Chuck as our guest today and ask you first, Chuck, if you would just start by sharing with everybody a little bit about you and how long you've been a cop and, you know, how you became a cop, all that.
All right. Well, thanks for having me, John. I've been a cop now 10 years. I took a little break in between there. I went back to college to get a master's degree. I started in a city called Lompoc, which is near where I live here. I started in a patrol car and spent 4 years there. I was a field training officer there before I left. Then I came over to Santa Maria, which is where I actually grew up, a little better pay, bigger city. And here in Santa Maria, I've worked again in a patrol car, and I transferred into their detective bureau where I did mostly property crimes, identity theft, and so forth, but we're a small agency, so if somebody dies or something, we have to all work together. So I've done everything from homicide and rape and most of the typical crimes. Additionally, I just started in on their SWAT team, so that's been kind of my latest and greatest interest in law enforcement.
Congratulations.
But that's kind of my career in a nutshell.
Cool. And I know that, you know, maybe, I think you said it, but you took a little bit of a break in the middle there, didn't you?
Yeah, about, I think it's been 3 years ago now. I actually resigned as a cop, and there was a short time that I wasn't a cop at all. In fact, I remember one time I was driving down the freeway, and I got highway patrol pulled in behind me, and I kind of got startled because I still had a gun in the car, because I always had a gun. And then I realized I'm not a cop. I can't really carry a gun. But I went back and became a reserve officer. It was kind of my plan while I was going to school was to be reserve, but I just hadn't done the paperwork yet. But, yeah, I took some time off because I never went to college full-time, you know, when I was young, mm-hmm. because I became a cop. And I wanted to go to full-time school, so I resigned and went back and get my master's degree in business, mm-hmm. and part of that was to help with my current business, which is a financial planning firm.
Well, yeah, I read your resume, and I noticed you were a board member or are a board member of your local police officers association. Is that right?
Yeah, I got off of that when I left Santa Maria PD to go back to school.
Yeah, okay.
I tell you, that's a difficult position to be in. It's one of those thankless jobs, just like being a cop.
Yep.
We have a board here, and I think it's 5 members, and we vote and pick the members. I ended up becoming the treasurer of that position, and I think that I got that by default just because I had been doing a bunch of not really formally financial planning, but kind of unofficially financial planning for a bunch of the other guys around the PD. So I think they assumed that qualified me to be the treasurer.
Well, I only brought it up because I you know, I commend you and any other officer out there that's working with their local protective association or their police officers association because, you know, we all need to be working together and somebody needs to take a leadership role to improve our working conditions, and the whole reason for Cops Alive being in existence is to try to get cops to work together so that we can, you know, go a little further to protect ourselves. There are an awful lot of threats out there, and it's not just the bad guys. There's an awful lot of stress attached to this job, and there are an awful lot of ramifications to being a police officer that I think a lot of young officers don't recognize. The suicide rates are very high. The cancer rates are very high. I think any cop you talk to will say they know a number of cops that are probably alcoholics. And I've certainly been divorced. I know a lot of officers have gone through divorce. So, you know, the whole purpose of Cops Alive is to help cops look out for other officers. And I commend you for donating your time. And I think that's what captured my interest in what you're doing. And maybe you can share a little bit more about how you developed an interest in finance and how you develop your current business. I know you've had a couple of others. I'm going to ask about those too, but I'd like to know what you're doing now.
Yeah, my current job, well, let me back up. Before I became a cop, I actually, my first interest was to be a stockbroker, and I didn't know what that meant, but it seemed kind of cool when I was 18 or so. And so I met with a stockbroker, told him what I wanted to do, and he said, well, what you need to do is learn how to sell. You need to get a job selling vacuums or cars or anything and learn how to sell. And so I thought, well, that's not at all what I wanted to do. I was interested in the stock market and retirement accounts and investments when I was in high school. I don't know why, but I was. So when I learned that, I ruled that out and then did some different jobs as a machinist and so forth. And eventually a friend of mine told me about his job as a cop, and I went to the academy and got hired on. But during that whole time as a cop, I'd always been reading the magazines and studying and taking care of my own investments and learning along the way. And then that led to, as I mentioned earlier, helping other guys with their finances and doing a little bit of tax stuff for people. And I eventually decided that I enjoyed doing that so much that I wanted to try to make it a business. Mm-hmm. So it took me a long time to figure out how to do it, meaning I had to get the formal education and then all of the regulatory stuff. But I kind of fooled around with it for a while, and then going to school was kind of my kickoff. So I went off to school and formally organized my business while I was in school. And in addition to earning my master's degree, I took a couple of correspondence training programs. One specifically is called the Certified Financial Planner Program, which is actually pretty challenging. I did that while I was in school. And then I also took a couple of correspondence tax courses and wrapped up most of that a little bit after I finished school, and then filled out all the compliance paperwork to be legal, actually legally be able to charge people for advice. Mm-hmm. And then started my business just, it's probably been a year and a half ago now. And then I ended up accepting a job back at the police department at the same time. And that kind of brings me up to where I'm at now.
Well, in total, I mean, I think a lot of people listening, you know, want to start their own business. They don't even know where to get started. Maybe it would be in financial planning, maybe not, but I think we all could certainly use a good dose of financial education. How much time did you put into this? How many years did that take you to get to where you are now?
Are you asking how long it took me to do this financial planning thing?
Or? Well, yeah, I mean, you talked about in high school, and then, you know, you started in college and then decided you need to go full time and then started taking some other courses. That sounds like several years worth of dedication.
Yeah, it's several years. I think whether it's financial planning or whatever it is, you need to start a business in something you're interested in. Because, like you said, it took me years to do this. I mean, you could do the formal education that you would need in a lot less time. Mm-hmm. But if you weren't really interested in it, then you wouldn't really have the knowledge that's really necessary to do it just by taking the minimum required courses. Because in addition to having some college training and some formal education, you have to have a much deeper understanding of financial planning or whatever business you're in, mm-hmm. in order to be successful. And I really think that most learning comes from reading and meeting other people and networking and learning from other people. So I don't really think that just formal education alone will do it. So it's hard to say how much time it will take, but if you start a business in something that you already have a passion about, then the time doesn't really matter so much.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Does that make sense, John?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, I know that this isn't your first business. You have had some others, or maybe you still have those active. Can you tell us about
that? Yeah. You know, my first real business, besides, you know, selling lemonade as a kid or mowing lawns or whatever, my first real business was a tactical training business. A partner and I, who was another cop, he still is another cop, we were really involved with teaching firearms, and that started, you know, as a range master at the police department. And then I took a job at Front Sight Firearms Training Institute in Las Vegas. Hmm. And that blossomed into a bunch of other different tactical stuff. And so we were teaching a bunch of classes for the police department and then for the military and then out here in Vegas. And that eventually evolved to us forming a business. And
like the administration said, if you guys are going to keep doing this, go do it on your own.
I'm sorry?
Like your administrators said, if you guys are going to keep doing this, go do it on your own.
Actually, they weren't really supportive of it, to be honest. Oh. We kind of got some flack when we told them we wanted to start a business. And the first thing they told us was, well, that's fine, but you're not going to get any business from our police department. And we were kind of disappointed by that. Yeah. But it kind of motivated us to even work even harder and said, all right, well, fine, we'll do it on our own. And we took this thing forward for a few years, and we never were really profitable. We struggled. We went through a lot of roadblocks. And what I gained out of this thing was, it wasn't really profitable, but I learned a lot from it in that my partner and I knew a whole lot about the tactics and how to teach a shooting class and all of that type of stuff. But we didn't know anything about marketing or running a business or promoting, and so that kind of is what pushed me to go to business school before I opened my new business, is because just having an understanding of the skill sets really isn't enough. It's marketing is such a big part of running a business and managing it and so forth. So that was kind of my education in the fact that I didn't know how to run a business, and it was priceless. Mm.
What kind of advice, at least along those lines, would you give other cops? I get the impression you think it's a good idea to maybe have a side business if you can.
I really do, because if you put all your eggs in one basket, which is a cliche term, I mean, you really have this feeling of being trapped and powerless. So if all of your income is based on one job and a guy gets injured in his career, which is really typical, it's really a stressful situation. So if you start going into other endeavors, not only do you have something to keep your mind occupied, which is a good thing, but you also have income coming in from other directions, which I think really reduces the stress of the law enforcement career. Mm-hmm.
I know that when I started putting together Cops Alive, I wrote a formal business plan, and I have another consulting business, too, that I developed when I retired. Same sort of thing. What kind of advice from your experience would you give other cops? Did you take any courses or did you write a formal business plan? Anything you would recommend?
Yeah, I did actually. I wrote a formal business plan for my financial planning firm, and actually I'm in the process of writing another business plan for a small gym my wife and I are looking into opening. And that process is priceless, because the finished product isn't as helpful as the process of actually writing a business plan, because if you get a book or some software, it basically is an outline of the things that need to be in a business plan. And what that does is forces you to consider things as simple as, where are you going to market, or where do you intend to get revenue, and how much are your expenses going to be? And at the end of doing this business plan, you're trying to project the future. And it'll tell you, if you do the exercise, if my estimates are correct, if I bring in X amount of revenue and I have, X amount of expenses, whether or not you can even be profitable. And it's much better to figure that out before you invest the time and money in opening a business than after, which is something we didn't do very well on our training business.
Did you go through a course or did you use software? I know with my two plans, I went through a class that was put on by the United States Small Business Administration. In some states, it's called Next Level, and in some states, it's called Leading Edge. Did you take a class or did you work through the software that's out there? Or?
A little of both. I took a few classes in my master's program on business. And then what I did was I had some software that you can buy business planning software anywhere. Yeah. And what I did while I was going through college was take some of the specific classes, for example, marketing, And while I was in those classes, I did that portion of my business plan for my financial planning company as part of my classes. So I kind of killed two birds with one stone. I was able to use some of the business plan as some of the projects for my classes, which really made school a lot more interesting. But now that I'm working on this this gym business plan, I've already done the exercise. I don't really think it's so necessary after you understand it, because really all you need is an outline and of the major expenses and costs and revenue areas for a business to do it. So now on my next business plan, it's going to be much simpler and much more streamlined. But I do think someone just starting out, it would be a worthwhile investment to buy the software or buy a book or, as you suggested, some class on it. I think it would be a great investment of time and money.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with you. I know that when I went through the second time, it was a whole different experience. The first time I kind of blew off all the financials, all those calculations you're supposed to be doing with your budget and your 2-year projection and 3-year projection. And the second time that meant a whole lot more to me because it really was, you know, kind of a temperature gauge of whether the business was a viable idea or not. And as much as I think a lot of cops hate to do some of that financial work, you really, you know, they're just projections, but you have to be honest with yourself and write down the numbers and use a spreadsheet or something to do the calculations and see how it looks a year from now or a couple of years from now and see whether it's a really a good idea or not.
Yeah, you're right. It's definitely frustrating to try to predict the future because it seems unrealistic. But as you just said, I'm doing this gym thing, and we're trying to figure out how much we'd need to charge our members, and we're doing our projections. And at the end of it, we said, well, God, we got to charge a lot more than we expected, or we're not going to go into business. And you're right. If you don't sit there and do those projections several years into the future, you're really wasting your time of even going into business.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always amazing how the expenses sort of sneak up on you. You know, you start all wide-eyed, and then all of a sudden it's like, wow, I got to do this. I have to pay for that, and I didn't think about this. And it's kind of amazing. So some of that brain damage is better spent in the beginning just working out the numbers than actually having to learn from your bad experiences.
Yeah, and I bet you'll agree with this, John, and I'm still learning like we all are, is that whatever you estimate your expenses to be before you start, just double them, and you'll be pretty accurate then, because all these things come out of nowhere that you don't anticipate.
Well, and if you're wrong, chances are if they're higher, you'll be in much better shape, and if you're projecting too high, that's just more profit for you, so it really doesn't hurt
right.
to do that anyway. Well, you know, I have to say one question I have. I'd like to hear a little more about financial planning, and maybe you can slant that toward police officers in general, because I think most of us could use some help. Most of us are not as interested, I think, in finances as you are, unless we're getting older and ready to retire. But I'm kind of curious how you manage to juggle all this with a family as well. I know you have a new baby. How are you managing to do all that?
You know, John, it's tough, honestly. I kind of have overcommitted some of my time, and I keep doing it. So I have to intentionally allot time with my family. I actually plug it into my calendar to make sure that I don't neglect that part of my life. But then again, a lot of what I'm doing has been motivated by my desire to spend time with my family. I'm kind of hoping to position myself to the point that I can work when I want to work, not because I have to work. So I definitely have to make sure and not put too much time into work. I have to focus on that. The other thing is you and I have kind of talked about this in the past, is I'm really trying to leverage different technologies, try to use different outsourcing. We talked briefly about this previously, but...
Yep.
So I use different software and hire other companies to do the things that I don't want to do so that I have more time to focus on the things that I'm better at or interested in doing rather than trying to do everything on my own.
Yeah. Did we talk about the book 4-Hour Work Week?
Yeah, we did. That's kind of what got us started on that conversation.
Yeah, I can't rave about that book enough. I think a lot of cops would read that and go, you know, this doesn't apply to me because it sounds like somebody who's stuck in the rat race and works in an office and he talks a lot about outsourcing your life and even getting a personal assistant that might be in India or the Philippines and having them take care of all kinds of things online that you don't have to do yourself. But I found it to be a fascinating read. And, you know, he has some very interesting concepts. I think you were kind of alluding to that. One of the terms that I really liked is lifestyle design. And it sounds to me like, I think you told me you were 38 years old.
I'm 34 now, I think.
Sorry. 34. Sorry, I'm not trying to add any years on there, but you know, you're pretty young still, and it sounds to me like you've already gotten the idea that you need to balance work and home if you want them both to be successful. And it sounds to me like you're kind of planning for the future, like maybe that law enforcement is a great career, but maybe not something you're going to do when you're 65 years old.
Yeah, like yourself, I've already been divorced once, so so I hopefully have learned from some of the mistakes in the past, which was back then I was young and I my career came first, and so I really have to be conscious not to let that happen again. And so some of the things that I've noticed with cops that I took out of that 4-hour week workbook is, on a really simple level, some of the things that we do, I've done myself, are not very efficient uses of your time. Very simple example is mowing your own lawn. Unless you really enjoy mowing your lawn, which some people do, you can have a beer and mow your lawn. Mm-hmm. You can pay a guy $10 an hour to mow your lawn and go to work and make $20 or $30 an hour. So if you're mowing your lawn, you're really losing that amount of money versus the time that you could be spending with your family.
Yeah.
I think that you need to put a certain price tag on your free time, which is something that most people, and particularly cops, don't do, is figure out how much their free time is worth to them. And then, if you want to use the terms of the book, outsource or hire somebody else to do the things that you don't particularly enjoy doing or that aren't really profitable.
You know, the other thing that I hear you talking about is it's not even just that, but, you know, you're building a business that can probably sustain you. I mean, you hope that, I'm assuming, you get to a point where the business is making more than your salary at the police department. But I think that takes some planning. I mean, I know for the first 15 years of my career, I spent an awful lot of time working in uniform, making great money doing off-duty jobs and security gigs, but boy, I spent it as fast as I earned it, and you know, sometimes that was kind of a waste of my time.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about all of us in law enforcement, but we all do it. We need to collect a bunch of things, and it usually has to do with cars and boats and houses and
stuff.
I've done it all. I've bought so much ridiculous stuff. And then in the end, I think of how much time did I have to work to get these things, and it just isn't really worth it. So now, yeah, I'm trying to build a business that ultimately, I'm doing a service business, which means I'm not selling a product like an iPod or something,
right.
But I still am trying to build something that it's going to make money when I'm not working, which is my long-term goal. And ultimately, my plan right now with my law enforcement job is I'm going to keep doing it as long as I enjoy it, A, and B, as long as it doesn't get in the way of my family life.
Mm-hmm.
So if there comes a point where I no longer am enjoying being a cop and my other businesses are making more money, then I'm not going to do it. But if I continue enjoying it and it's not so stressful that it's interfering with my family life, I'll keep doing it forever. But we'll see what happens.
Good for you. I'm hoping that just listening to you talk will spark some ideas in other officers' minds that, you know, if I had one thing to instill from my experiences, it would be to plan a little further in advance. And I know when I was a 20-something rookie, I really couldn't care less about my retirement. I couldn't care less about my future. And money was, you know, just something that was in the checkbook. And as I got older and started paying more attention, I really wished I'd been a little more alert when I was younger and set a little bit more money aside, because compound interest certainly will benefit you if you leave that money alone for a while. And I left it alone while I was working, but I really wish I would have invested a lot more of it while I was was young and able to earn, you know, kind of unlimited amounts by working extra duty and stuff.
Right. You know, there's a, that reminds me of a book I read, John, that kind of got me thinking different in my life. And I think it was, it's called something about the 10 differences between the millionaire and the middle class or something like that. Mm-hmm. But basically, long story short, his book, the premise is that the really, really poor, the people that we in law enforcement deal with, you know, the crackhead or the drug dealer on the corner or welfare recipient, they plan for the next couple of hours, you know, where can they get their next high? Mm-hmm. And then there's a continuum all the way up to the multi-millionaire. And he says that the middle class plans till the next payday, which is 2 weeks away.
Yeah.
And then the millionaire plans for several years in advance, and the multimillionaire plans for decades ahead. And that's exactly what you're saying, is if you can step back and plan more for the future rather than just for the moment, you'll be really successful in life. And so I've tried to take that advice from this book and implement it into my own life.
Excellent. Great advice. You know, I would love to know a little bit more. Is there some... I got the impression that not that many of your clients are cops, but I'd ask you to maybe tailor some of your suggestions to police officers. What would you recommend as a financial planner? What would you have some tips that everybody can learn from?
Some of the most basic fundamental things that all people need, but particularly cops, I think the very first thing is just to begin saving, putting yourself first, and this is a very common financial planning thing, which is pay yourself first,
right,
where you make sure that you're putting money into your savings before you're making your car payment or paying for your house or your groceries or what have you. And it seems difficult, but once you write the check to yourself first each month, or even better, have it automatically deducted from your paycheck,
yeah,
you somehow adjust. And you're able to still make your mortgage payment and your grocery payments and so forth. It's basically building some habits and creating a new spending method to where that you always are saving first. And if everyone did that and then progressively increased that dollar amount, so, for example, if you take $50 every paycheck out and automatically have it come out of your checking account into some sort of savings or investment, and then every time you get some sort of pay raise, because we're typically on these fixed pay raises of 3% a year or 5% a year or whatever,
yep,
every time you get one of those pay raises, you put that percentage into your savings, and your savings will continue to grow, and you'll still have the same amount of spending money. You'll never be depriving yourself, but you'll be, your net worth will be growing. That's kind of the first and most important thing. And I think the next second most important thing is to make sure you're living within your means, which means don't spend more than you're bringing in, which is very difficult for not only police officers, but all of society these days is living on credit cards.
Yeah.
And you need to make sure that you're only using good debt. And it's kind of difficult, but basically good debt is anything that's tax deductible. Bad debt is anything else, such as a car payment or a credit card payment. If you can get those two things in order, most of the other stuff will come together.
Yeah, I remember, I agree with you. I remember when I was young, that first advice about pay yourself first never seemed to fit into my budget. And I think, as you recommended, it needs to become a habit when you're young and there's still more money than there is month. And
right,
because I think it catches up with you pretty quickly. If you start buying a lot of stuff on credit, then, you know, there's not much money left at the end of the month. And I always used to think, God, I can't pay myself first because then I can't meet my bills. And so I'm hoping that anybody listening will take that to heart and try to establish those habits when they're really young. And for those of the rest of us, then, as mm-hmm. you mentioned, you really just have to sort of force yourself to do it and ease your way into it.
Yeah, it's amazing, a guy that, you know, 20-something years old, young 20s, and just puts a little bit amount away, and then he ignores it and looks at it 5 years later. It's just amazing how much that money grows.
You have gone the extra mile to really get the training, and obviously that not only helped you, but obviously the officers that you work with. Do you think that everybody needs to go out and get a financial planner? Or tell me a little bit about that kind of, you know.
That's a good question.
Program.
And what my answer to that question is if you're interested in learning about personal finance, you don't need a financial planner. You can read about it and learn about it and study about it. It's not difficult, but most people aren't interested.
Yeah.
So if you're not interested, you should at least hire somebody who can get you on the right track. And it's like the same thing with mowing your lawn or fixing your plumbing, repairing something around your house. If you're not interested in repairing your plumbing, it's not overly difficult to learn how to do it, but you don't want to be a plumber for a living, so why spend the time learning how to do it? Just hire somebody to do it.
Yeah.
It's a lot cheaper than trying to learn it yourself. And the other thing with financial planning is none of it's very difficult. It's all pretty easy, but it's the behaviors and changing the behaviors that have created a lot of the problems that we've all run into, like spending on debt.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have somebody there to coach you, it's much easier to make sure you stay on track, just like a personal trainer at the gym. Everybody knows what it takes to get in good shape. It's not hard. It's just having the self-discipline that's hard. So sometimes a personal trainer can keep you in line and give you that phone call to make sure you show up at the gym and somebody there to hound you to make sure you're eating the right foods. A financial planner can do the same thing, where they meet with you periodically and make sure you're staying on track and give you some level of accountability. Having said that, I would encourage anyone that's listening to look for what I call a fee-only financial planner.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. I noticed
how
that
I run my
website.
Practice, and I'm kind of self-righteous about it. And that is that you pay somebody a flat fee, just like you would your plumber, and they for their advice, rather than someone who's going to try and sell you a bunch of financial products.
Mm.
And there's a lot of honest people that are selling financial products, but there's an inherent conflict with somebody who's trying to sell you something and also trying to give you a device. And you don't always know if that person has your self-interest or, at heart.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I saw that on your website, and I had never seen that before in the financial planning arena, that your advice is fee-based and not a percentage of the products they're selling. It's not a ongoing, unaccountable fee. It's got roots in what you're providing them, and I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, there's a few different ways to get paid in this industry, and originally it was all commission, where you went to a stockbroker, they charge you X amount of percent and sell you something. You go to your insurance guy, same thing.
Yeah.
Then it's evolved to what you use the term fee-based, which sometimes has to do with a little bit of a flat fee,
mm-hmm.
and a little bit of a commission. And then on the other extreme is how I operate my practice, which is fee-only, meaning my business, my practice receives no commissions. We don't sell any products, only charge a flat fee. So if you see, whether they take your advice and invest money or not, they still have to pay the fee.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless of what investment product the person buys, the planner still makes the same amount of money for their giving the advice.
Hmm.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it's. The fee only seems a lot more logical to me because then, as you pointed out, your advice is not necessarily tied to the product. And when you're the consumer buying that, you probably don't know enough to be able to tell the difference. And I think it makes it a lot. It seems a lot more ethical to me. Because it doesn't force you to try to sell me a product that you're going to make more money off of.
Right, exactly. And one of the greatest examples, I think, is that if you have a mortgage on your house and you owe, let's say, $500,000, $500,000, and you also have $500 million sitting in an investment account, if you go ask your financial planner, should I pay off my mortgage with the money, or should I invest the money into these, you know, stocks or bonds or whatever? Mm-hmm. And the financial planner's motivated. He doesn't get paid unless you spend the $500,000 on stocks or bonds if he's a commissioned salesman.
Yeah.
So the advice that he gives you may or may not be the best advice for you, and it may be the best advice for him. Having said that, paying off your mortgage is a complicated equation, and there's no right or wrong answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
But you just want to know that whoever's giving you this advice is truly giving the best advice for you and not for him, the salesman.
Yeah. Interesting. You know, I think now would be a good time. I went to your website. Would you mind doing a plug for your website so people can find you?
Sure. It's www.cjrylant, that's R-Y-L-A-N-T, wealthmanagement.com.
Cool. You know, when we talked the other day, it didn't sound to me like that you had even really targeted police officers as clients. I think you opened your practice and just went about conducting business. I'm assuming that you you would work with police officers. And I think it's kind of logical. I mean, you are one, and I think you could help us a whole lot better maybe than somebody that doesn't even understand the career.
Yeah, I haven't focused only on police officers, but most of my clients actually are police officers.
Good.
I've kind of opened it to anyone that how do I describe it? Kind of an upper middle income type client. Basically, I have to be able to provide enough savings for these people to offset my fee for me to take them as a client. And somebody who's really, really low income, I couldn't save them enough money in taxes or investment fees to offset my fee.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the really, really high net worth clients are not somebody that I'm interested in working with. I really want to work with people that are similar to me, meaning kind of a growing younger family. So most of my clients are between 35 and 55 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, most of them seem to be cops because I know most of the people I know are cops, but mm-hmm. I'm not limited to just them.
Well, I'm kind of curious because the readers of Cops Alive come from all over the world, actually, and
mm-hmm.
the people that are listening to this, first of all, for those in the United States, can you offer your services to anybody outside of the state of California, or how does that work?
As of today, the answer is no, and it's twofold. One, I'm not set up legally to do that. I'm set
mm-hmm.
up right now just to do business in California.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part of it is a lot of planners are going to more of the virtual, you know, meeting on the computer and so forth.
Yeah.
But right now, and this may change in the future, it's so important for me to be able to meet with people one-on-one and form that trust because, I mean, they're confiding in me all of their life secrets. You know, I'm reading their tax returns and how much they're spending their money and where it's being spent. And so for me, it's important to meet with them one-on-one.
Yeah.
And we meet up to 12 times a year for the first year, which is the most intensive part of it. So right now I'm not working by phone or by the internet, but there are a lot of planners that are evolving their practice into that. Just I'm not doing it at the moment.
Well, and I appreciate your honesty and candor in that. I mean, cops are certainly suspicious. I know that when I went to my
yeah.
financial planner for the first time, I was a little nervous about spilling my guts and all of my financial, you know, bits and pieces out onto the desk. So it is certainly about building trust. But I'm kind of curious.
It's hard. It's really hard to sit with somebody, and if you're sitting with someone, then you probably feel like you haven't made all the right choices, which none of us, me included, ever do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard to open yourself up to somebody like that because you're afraid of getting, you know, ridiculed or thought down low. So the trust with whoever you're working with is extremely important.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I was going to ask you, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but if a police officer from outside of California or even outside the United States wanted to send you an email and ask either for advice or referral or, you know, general information, is that something you would accept?
Oh, absolutely. I'd encourage anyone to call me or email me, and if it's something real brief, I'll take care of it myself. If it's a referral, I'll try to point them somewhere. I'm part of a network of 150 other advisors who work very similar to how I do over the in the United States, so I could refer them to one of those people. Again, I don't get any type of fees or brownie points or anything. It would be merely to help somebody out. But yeah, I would encourage that for sure.
All right. Well, and when you and I were talking in preparation for this, I said, you know, I think the first time we talk on the phone, I think the people ought to get to know you a little bit better. And I think that's about building trust, even with somebody that's listening to a podcast. But I think there's a lot more we could probably go into, and I would like to invite you to come back and be a guest again. And maybe we can go into a little bit more about that. I know I have an awful lot of friends that are police officers in Canada and Great Britain, and I've met people from all over the world. I'm a member of IPA, the International Police Officers Association, or the International Police Association. And, you know, I think we all come from the same kind of background, and I think we all want to help each other. So I'm thinking there's more that you and I could talk about, and maybe we could do a little preparation and make some information available that would serve police officers both in the United States and elsewhere.
Yeah, I agree. I would look forward to something like that. We definitely can share a lot more information that would help a lot of people in this area for sure.
Okay. Well, I pretty much used up as much of your time as I feel comfortable in taking today, but I'm curious, is there anything else that you'd like to add that I haven't asked you today? And if not, we'll sign off and I'll make some arrangements to get you back again.
We actually covered a lot, and I appreciate you giving me the time to talk to you. I enjoyed it a lot.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate your time. Cops Alive is all about helping police officers and any law enforcement professionals sort of plan for their success and happiness and health, both on the job and beyond the job. And, you know, I don't think anybody else is going to look after us, so I think we kind of need to do it for each other. And I appreciate your taking the time, and I commend you for all the time, energy, and effort you've put into making your life a better life, and for you and your family, and also, you know, the commitment you've given the other police officers in your area and on your department. So I thank you for your time and your dedication, and I look forward to having you back again.
All right, well, John, I appreciate your website. I found it really informative, so I will return the thanks to you as well.
I appreciate it. This is John Marks from Cops Alive, and thanks for listening.